Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Quantum physics has shown that we are living in a consensual reality. Our guest today suggests that however real this reality seems, the truth is that our senses are reporting back to us only a very small portion of the greater reality. Does the brain selectively filter our perception of reality through our personal histories, our beliefs, habits of mind, our prejudices? What is consciousness? Is it formed by the brain, or is there an underlying reality for all of existence in a universal consciousness? Today, we'll be exploring these exciting subjects and more with our guest, Dr. Howard Eisenberg. Howard Eisenberg is a medical doctor with additional postgraduate training in both psychology and psychiatry. He's also been awarded a postgraduate degree for his parapsychological research on telepathy. He's the author of Inner Spaces, Parapsychological Exploration of the Mind, and Dream It to Do It, The Science and the Magic, Decoding Reality 2.0. Join us for the next hour as we explore the plasticity of conventional physical reality with our guest, Dr. Howard Eisenberg. I'm speaking with Howard from his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Howard, welcome.
Thank you so much, Justine. I really appreciate this opportunity.
It's so good to have you. It's been many, many years since you've been on New Dimensions, so I'm looking forward to this. And in your book, which is so dense with information and wisdom, what I loved about it is that it's short, you know, but potent is what I would say. And I love that because you get right to the point. You just like really hit us with a lot of wisdom and thought and research. And in our perception of reality, we're very convinced that the external world is what it is as we see it. And you describe this as consensual reality, as a collective illusion, maybe. So tell us, what is this consensual reality, and is there more than that?
Well, to use the metaphor just for a moment of an iceberg, when we see an iceberg protruding above the waterline, that's only a very small percentage of the total mass of the iceberg. So what I call consensual reality, which is what we're experiencing now as we have this discussion and for your listeners listening to us, is one part of reality. It's just not at all the whole part. In fact, it's a very small part. And in fact, it's somewhat distorted. We use the term consensual because in this level of reality, and I think of it as levels, we have other people, and other sentient beings and the physical nature, which appears to be outside of us. And it's something like we sort of have an agreement on, in a sense, in a way that there's no me without we. Or to use Shakespeare's terminology, all of us on stage, we're about players on it. So on this level, we sort of agree on a certain sense of what is real and values and interactions and what to value. But again, it's somewhat distorted. And we know that from a variety of sources. One is the scientific discoveries themselves, which I deeply discuss in my book. But also, if you look externally at the state of the world today, it's not working out so well. We thought we understood reality. We thought we even had quite a level of mastery of reality in terms of being able to transmute things and do almost miraculous things as we are even now in this distant communication we're having right now. But that's, again, part of the illusion. When we look at what is called the materialistic reductionist paradigm of reality, which is the assumption that there's an independent physical reality externally to us. And that has been the operating assumption for the last couple of centuries in science. And most of the public thinks of it this way. But it's breaking down now. We thought we had mastery, but our environment is collapsing on our watch. We have tremendous extinction of species. We have all types of toxic chemicals in our environment affecting our physical well-being on this level. We have the imminent global climate change, which we're already seeing some of the ravages of that. We have a breakdown of society, of culture. As you know, in America right now, there's a tremendous amount of divisiveness, not just a disagreement about certain values or points of view, but an actual, beyond disrespect, almost hatred and desire to eliminate those who have a different point of view. And we look at the globe more broadly, democracy itself, for example, which we used to think is a very progressive development in governance, is really undermined in so many different ways in so many different countries. So again, our sense of the independent existing world, if we even just look at conventional news without looking at the science, it's not working. If we really understood how reality works, then why would we have problems right now with extinction of so many species and humankind? Here's one example too, the sperm count of men is declining all over the world, which we need for reproduction of the species on this level. So I look at this in addition again to the scientific information I present in my book, and relating it back to the ancient indigenous teachings of so many different cultures, which has the similarity of saying again, this is illusion, this level we call consensual reality. There's a much deeper, more profound level of reality. And I think the divisiveness we're experiencing in society right now, which is to an alarming toxic degree, because we've been distracted overly by the outside world of appearances. Just like, for example, occasionally we have dreams, such as particularly when they're bad, nightmares. And when you're in the midst of those dreams, it seems totally real. And then we wake up and we realize, no, it was just a dream. In a sense, we're caught up in a collective dream. Beyond even the issue of an independent existing physical reality, even to the level of there's a solitary unity to existence. The mystics call this the oneness of the allness. So even our sense of other people is partly illusion.
Howard, you have opened up with a lot of information here. So I want to kind of slow it down a little bit, if I can. You have pointed out a lot of things and happenings around the world that are very frightening, that, as you pointed out, it's a breakdown a lack of cohesiveness in the world today. And as you mentioned, you know, the environment, climate, extinction of species, that society not having an agreement, you know, and a local culture won't even agree. And out of that comes the hatred that even wants to deny others their point of view or their even beingness because of possibly the color of their skin or whatever it is or where they came from. Or it just, it goes on and on. And this is, all of this is pretty frightening right now. And then you're saying, okay, but it's not reality. I mean, there's another reality. Okay, but how do we tap in then, or how do we shift things? How do we tap into that other or another reality that is more cohesive, more loving, more whatever it is that we would want, that's more beneficial to life rather than the breakdown of life? So help us out here.
As you remarked earlier, my book is unusually information dense compared to most books. It's meant to be read very slowly for reflection. It's actually entheogenic in its design. It's like intellectually psychedelic. It guides you to an awareness of different reality. So let me just say, for people in general, they can touch this deeper reality when they're experiencing love. When you're experiencing love, you're feeling a profound connection. It's, for example, like, I sometimes use the term almost a communion of souls. It's a deep, deep connection with what appears to be a separate being, except we feel a connection. We're a we, not just a me. That's a we mindset, not a me mindset, so to speak. On a more deeper level, in terms of something people could actually learn to do to have a richer experience of these different levels of reality, meditation is one of the best pathways that way. In meditation, we withdraw our attention from the distractions of the outer world. When we do meditation, we even escape the limitations of our own ego, and we just become an observer. And back to what I said about mysticism, the oneness, the allness, you just experience everything just out there. And you're the experiencer of it at a very deep level through meditation. Another way, which can be fraught with dangers as well, are psychedelic drugs. Again, it opens up the brain, the mind, to an expanded awareness. And so people feel a connection, literally, with, for example, their whole environment. It's almost like you have a tactile touch sensation of what's out there right now, because you go to that deeper level of connection.
We're going to go more into that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Howard Eisenberg, and he is the author of Dream It to Do It, The Science and the Magic, Decoding Reality 2.0. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his extensive website. It's drhowardeisenberg.com. And that's spelled out DR, just like the abbreviation for doctor, DR Howard Eisenberg, EISENBERG.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Howard Eisenberg, and you just, when you talked about, you said like one way to expand our mind or our consciousness might be through psychedelics or being maybe in the flow of when like athletes might, you know, be in that certain flow. Csikszentmihalyi, Mihail Csikszentmihalyi talks about being in the flow and here in psychedelics maybe. But what is interesting about all of that is that even when we're in a high state of creativity, the prefrontal part of our brain is actually not very active. In fact, it's kind of turned off. Mm-hmm. So let's just talk about brain science for a moment. And does consciousness reside in the brain? Does it create consciousness or not?
That's a really important question. And to begin with, I'll point out on this level, again, as I think of the levels of reality, we don't have one brain. All of us human beings have three brains, even though we're taught otherwise. For example, we have a heart brain. The heart has its own nervous system. The heart has its own memory system. The heart has more nerves going up to control and modify brain functioning then the brain can modify the heart functioning. Then we also have what we call the microbiome or the gut brain, the trillions of bacteria that reside in our large bowel and the colon. There's more DNA in those bacteria than in the entire human body otherwise. Those bacteria produce and secrete neurotransmitters. In fact, there's a popularity in psychiatry with the so-called SSRI, antidepressant medications, which affect serotonin metabolism in the brain. The reality is that 90% of the serotonin in our body comes from the gut microbiome, not the head brain. The other point I would make, so that's just on that level of reality, as they say, we have it wrong. It's not just one brain. But secondly, and more profoundly, going back to the operating assumption that scientists and most people have, that it's the head brain that creates consciousness, which is totally incorrect, by the way. There's no evidence that the physical brain produces consciousness. All we have is what we call correlational data, meaning if you stimulate parts of the head brain, I'll use that expression, however, electrically or by chemicals, or if it's damaged by disease or an accident, it affects our awareness on this level and our external ability to do things, such as even when people have strokes, they can't talk anymore, for example, in that example. But the reality is, it's not coming from the head brain. In fact, there's no theory, not even a theory, to explain how the material brain could give rise to immaterial consciousness. And I mean it that profoundly. Not only is there no evidence, we don't even have a theory to explain that. I think a more appropriate explanation of the relationship between the head brain and consciousness, our awareness, is more like a radio receiver. It selectively filters out some of the information. So by contrast, again, with psychedelics or in meditation, where we perceive more of a comprehensive unity.
Is this where our biases and our upbringing and the way that we see the world, then that's part of the filter too? Or
yes,
as I
yes.
say, our habits of mind, that's part of that filter system. It says, oh, okay, we experience this, so we're going to filter that out because that scared us when we were a kid mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yes. So part of it, yes, is physical, the actual senses we have. You know, vision, hearing, touch, partly that's that alone restricts what information comes to our awareness. And it doesn't just restrict it, it partly distorts and creates it. So we think that what we see on the physical realm is exactly what's out there, but not so. I mean, for example, people who are colorblind don't see colors, and yet they can be intelligent and aware, but they don't see the reality we see out there.
I was really curious. I was thinking as I was delving into all of this, what if it was possible for me to exchange my beingness with another person and just for a moment to see the world as they saw it. And I felt with reading all this material that I would probably be shocked at what they were seeing that was maybe so different from my reality. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. In fact, a very good example of this, coming back, I repeat, to this level of reality that we're talking about right now, is in terms of ideological biases. So, for example, if you show, let's say, a video clip about a particular political message, be it on the right side or the left side of the spectrum, and you show it to people who have that internal belief system that they believe in, let's say, more of a Republican point of view or more of a Democratic point of view, they don't actually perceive the same message. You may think, well, it's there, it's objective. And we know that in part for two reasons, not just their subjective beliefs not being affected, let's say, by a contrary message, but when we record brainwave activity, different parts of the brain are activated in people who have prejudices, biases. So it shows, again, the filtering.
So it actually shows a filter system. You know, going back, I was thinking as you were describing the different brains we have and the gut brain and the biome, all the bacteria, it's like, oh my goodness. And I was remembering that I read an article about something called a bobtail squid. And it roams around in kind of shallow water in mm-hmm. the ocean looking for food. Mm-hmm. And it does this in the daylight. The problem is that when it does this, it produces a shadow. And so, of course, the food that it could get just scrambles away. And, mm-hmm. However, it's worked with this symbiotic relationship with some bacteria mm-hmm. that lets off a kind of light. So it has all this bacteria that lives on the bottom side of the squid. So when it moves around in the water, it's actually like a flashlight being shined down, so it does not produce the shadow. And I was just so struck by this symbiosis of life. And when you mention the gut and we say, well, you know, is that your gut reaction? What is your gut telling you? Is that what, you know, we have these expressions. Yes. And maybe they're very, very truthful because there's such a symbiotic relationship between our beingness and our own gut and the biome that's there.
Correct. And even similarly, we have an expression, path of the heart, or, you know, or heartfelt feelings. So again, our culture, our language partly references some awareness of the contribution in these areas of our body to our sense of awareness.
Exactly. So in all of the work that you're talking about, is there a way that we can start to live in a more relaxed way, even despite all the things that are happening in the world today? What's your suggestion? What is the antidote to being frightened by it all, or being resisting it, or being angry, or all of those things that we want to say, oh, those people are really wrong, and but there's nothing I can do about it, you know, and that despair. So what can we do?
We need to appreciate, again, that although it seems that we're all separate from each other, from other sentient beings, from the rest of nature, that's illusion. It is not such. There's an expression called soul gazing, which goes back to ancient, you know, Hindu writings. And we have the poetical expression, you know, the eyes are the windows of the soul. So back to your question, if we were more intentional when we encounter fellow human beings of looking them in the eye, with kind of soft eyes, open eyes, I don't mean glaring, that alone would give us a sense of connection we don't have right now. Secondly, when we're feeling or hearing others coming from anger, that's a warning sign we're deviating away from the greater reality. You know, traditionally in the Christian teaching, God is love. And R.M. Buck, the psychiatrist who had a spontaneous mystical experience, came to, he believed, an understanding, realization that the fundamental connecting principle of the whole universe is love. So again, looking in his eyes and trying to come more at other fellow beings with love. And when you experience the opposite, when you hear people spewing hatred and anger, that is a sign they're off kilter. Mm-hmm. They're not speaking truth. They're not caring for our well-being.
There was something when you talk about this, the universal mind, let's say, there is this reality that's underlying. I go back in your book and others on New Dimensions have mentioned the physicist, the quote from the physicist Max Planck about consciousness is fundamental. And rather than material reality is not fundamental, but consciousness, he uses the phrase, you cannot get behind consciousness. And if you stop and think about that, anything that's material, you can get behind or get besides or get above or get below, you know, you can do all of that, but consciousness has no beginning or end. So I love that about that being fundamental. But in talking about that, then we're talking about a universal consciousness. And I know that you use a metaphor of like ocean. And if you could help us with that.
Yes. So a way of illustrating our relationship as apparently individual egos, individual beings, to the greater reality, the whole, is to think of ourselves in a sense like waves, which, as we know, when you are looking, let's say, at an ocean, you sometimes can see discrete waves, but they don't last. They're impermanent. Some are becoming larger for a while. Some are falling back into the body of the ocean. So our relationship is somewhat analogous, again, to waves of an ocean, because at this deeper level, as opposed to the illusion of separateness on the top, they all come out of the same base. And I relate this, as you know, too, to many of the religious teachings of all the world religions, but using Christianity as an example right here, where Jesus says, I and the Father are one, but the Father is greater than I. That was a question that puzzled me when I was 10 years old. And I remember asking my teacher about it. And they reprimanded me for, you know, finite mind cannot understand the infinite. You shouldn't ask such questions. But if you think of this model, if Jesus is a large wave and still part of the ocean, but the ocean collectively, God, is larger. So it's not a contradiction how one can be connected, but larger.
I love that. I love that, Howard. I'm here with Dr. Howard Eisenberg, and we're talking about that universal consciousness and reality. I'm Justine Willis-Toms, and you're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Dr. Howard Eisenberg, and you just mentioned, and I really wanted to emphasize what you said, because when I read this there in the Bible, it's like Jesus